I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Hey guys, here's the deal. I had some technical difficulties, so the first part of this podcast is going, or the first just intro is me on my headphones, not on the cool mic, but don't worry, when the story starts, we're going to get locked in on the better microphone. Thank you for
locked
listening.
Locked and loaded.
Thank you
locked
for
and loaded Tootsie Rolls.
Quinn, tell me about your turkey day. Tell me everything about your Thanksgiving. Are you grateful? Are you thankful? Are you angry? Are you happy? Are you sad? Are you loving life? Are you happy to be here? Go now.
I had a great Thanksgiving. We had a really sweet little group, and we did, we had quite the feast. You know, it was like six desserts. It was really amazing. All the food was good. A ton of shrimp cocktail we had. I made some pumpkin simple syrup so I could do pumpkin cocktails, and that was yummy and fun.
That's so and yummy and fun.
We played Taboo, and we watched what movie? Oh, we watched the weirdest movie. We watched a movie after we put the kids to bed called The Gate. It's an 80s
cult?
Horror movie.
Horror cult?
Horror. But like, picture like Goonies vibe where it's the kids and they're like, we accidentally opened a portal that demons can come through. And it's very brave in the way it tries to use special effects before its time to mixed
brave.
Reception. And yeah, and it was nice because, you know, Jordan Bick spent the night and it was nice to have Frida here, but also Fern is the cutest baby in the world.
She's
and
so
Alan's
sweet.
Here. And it was just like the whole Alan, family.
You allowed Alan into your home?
I always let Alan come to Thanksgiving.
Alan is a very special dog, though. I do think Alan is just chill.
Well, Alan also, I was explaining to people when I was like, there's going to be a dog here. I was like, you'll see. They like put a bed on the floor. Alan walks in and is like very mellow and is like, hey, everybody. And then like takes a seat for the evening. Like,
I love Alan very much. They asked me to watch him in October and I was so afraid he couldn't get up and down my stairs with comfort.
Yeah.
But he is like, he. How would you describe him? He has the sweetest little puppy face and he has a really weird
body. And
he's
so soft.
He has such a weird body and I love him so much.
But I just like that he has a dog that doesn't bark. No. That is like a dog that walks in and doesn't need anything. It's just like, hey, he was like the kids' table. The food is really low. And he'd walk up and look at it and be like, oh, I wish I could have that. But I know I can't. And then he'd like sit. He's just like behaved as hell.
How is Griffin with Alan?
Oh, Griff loves Alan.
I know.
I mean, my kids love dogs. So there are, I should say, I don't know if Cole loves dogs. Griff definitely loves dogs.
Griffin feels like the animal kid for you. Like, like he loves, but also I have that great video of Koa when we were in Maine. With that cat, just was like the cutest.
Oh,
do you remember that? He it was so fun.
So sweet. How was your Thanksgiving and being home with family? Oh my gosh, I forgot you were going on that cruise. You gotta tell me how fun that was. That must have been wild.
It was, well, okay, so it was amazing. Unfortunately, we had some sick members of the family, but
Of course.
Of course, it's
Oh
a
my
cruise.
gosh.
Like you're putting things in your mouth that you shouldn't have the amount of food on the cruise. It's so insane. It was so fun. We all met in Fort Lauderdale and we had a very festive Thanksgiving meal of Mexican food, of which my dad couldn't attend because he was like coming out with a cold. So he's like, I have to go sleep. So it was like, you know, I love Thanksgiving food. I love a Thanksgiving meal, and my dad does as well because my dad and I make it together. And so there was a part of it that my dad and I kind of were like, we gotta make a turkey. When are we making a turkey? And we haven't. We're gonna do it probably for Christmas, but we will make my dad's stuffing, his mom's recipe, which is like a very special thing for me and my family. And so yeah, so we're gonna do that later. But the cruise was so much fun, and I spent such incredible quality time with my nephews, which is obviously like my favorite thing in the whole world. Each of them, like I had such special moments with them. And the best was that the rooms are pretty small. So there's like a king bed, and then they have a bunk bed that comes out of the ceiling in a way. Do you remember this when you were on the cruise? And because of the way it was worked out, it was like each room got a kid because I think there was like maximum of 3 people per room or something. And then we're like, we'll adjust. But the sweetest thing was I shared a room with my sister, and my nephews all wanted to spend the night in our room. So we had like slumber parties with my nephews every night, and I got to just like wake up, like they just woke up and they'd be like, and Carrie, could play word games. And so it was really fun, but the amount of quality time I had with my nephews was so fun. I felt like my mom really had a great birthday celebration, and my one nephew celebrated his actual birthday on the ship, which was really fun. And my mom made it very special for him. And then for my mom's birthday, I put together a book with photos and stories from all of her friends. And so I got to give that to my mom, and she got to read it, and she was really moved and touched by it. Anyway, it was so much fun. I love my family. It was really nice.
Yeah, that is really nice. But I bet it was a nice break from
Oh,
your
I just want to be
feelings.
around kids. I just wanted to be around people. They shock you into presence in a way that I'm like, oof, get me there.
Yeah, they're highly demanding. It's true. We poor My kids have been sick. Cole was sick for a little now. Griff was sick. Griff is back in school today for picture day, but didn't go to school Monday and Tuesday. So we've had Griff home Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Can you tell me how you, hey, Quinn, how you feeling, babe?
We've been hanging with my friend Griffin.
And how's
He's
it
a total
going?
rock star. You know what? We did a lot of fun things in the last couple of weeks, and it's so cute because it just happens to be that time of year. And we took Griff, as you know, to the circus for his birthday, and then
Ugh.
we went to Lightscape at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden, which we love. And then we went on this past Sunday, a week after the circus. There was a show I really got highly recommended to me that was a magic show in the city that we took them to.
You mean Mario the Magic Maker,
Yes.
of which I saw in Edinburgh like 2 years ago. I brought some friends.
Was he doing like it for kids?
Yeah, it's a kid. I had friends come and visit in Edinburgh, and I had heard about this show, and I had seen him do a sample, and so I bought us tickets for that show. It was the kids I babysat for who were visiting Edinburgh, and it was, I mean, it's a very moving, lovely,
It's
wonderful magic
very
show.
moving. It's so beautiful. And I had never seen a show at the New Victory. We got totally cheap tickets because we sat in the highest balcony, which was fun too, because we were
On
so high
top.
up in the air, like to a point where Cole was like, I'm scared. And I was like, I know, it's really high. But the New Victory Theater is like a theater that does stuff for kids. And you walk in, and the lobby has all kinds of things for them to do before the show, like learn magic tricks and make things that have to do with what'll be in the show. And it was great. We made a whole day of it, really, because we did that. And then we went to Shake Shack, and
Oh,
then we walked through
great
Bryant
day.
Park. And then we had never been into the main branch library building, so we went in there to see the tree.
You haven't? And they have like a little museum there that has some like cool artifacts and stuff. That's a great library.
Yeah, we went in the museum there, and then we headed home and did dinner with some friends. But it's just been very holiday vibes. And then Griff was so sick the last 2 days that he's been, but I've been putting on really nostalgic things like Sesame Street's Christmas Eve and The Snowman, and like making Griff watch all these things that I kind of want in the background because they feel like what I watched when I was little.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And now Griff seems better today. So hopefully he'll get through this school picture moment.
I mean, I can't wait for the photos. I want to give me a copy. You know me, I like a copy.
Yeah.
Where, really good. What was, how was he sick? What was going on?
I don't know. It's like they both had this pretty weird sickness that started with full body muscle aches and then turns into just a serious cough. But they both had a day of the cough where they were like, I'm going to throw up because I have so much mucus in my body and I don't know how to get rid of it. And Koa just said she was going to throw up and never did, but Griff threw up a bunch and then had like some fever. Like it was everything. And
that sounds rough for everyone in your
like
family.
He was pretty good. He was a sport. Yeah, it was rough. Like Matt had to cancel some chess lessons and stay home with him yesterday because I had my sonogram yesterday, which was so wild. I got to tell you, I go into the city at like 10 to get more breast imaging and a sonogram. And then after they do that, they put you in a different waiting room. And I'm in the waiting room and another woman comes in and she's crying and she's talking to them. And she's, you're making me so nervous. Now I'm in this other weird waiting room. Why? Are you about to tell me something? And I peek out my head because it's one of those waiting rooms where you can't really tell someone's in there. Like each area is a little box. Yeah. And I peeked out my head so that she would see that she's not alone in the waiting room. And she goes, oh, good, you're here. But she doesn't know me. But she's just like, okay.
No, I mean, if anyone saw Quinn in the waiting room, it'd be happy.
Well, I said to her, it's just a waiting room. It, like, you're putting too much on this. It's just another area they have us sit in so they know where we're at in the flow of things. And then she starts crying and she said, I'm so scared. I said, why are you so scared? I said, it's just more imaging. I said, some of us just have, you know, more dense breasts. They need to do more imaging. It's not anything for you to get upset about. And she said, but what if they come in and they say, I need a biopsy? And I said, then you'll get a biopsy. It's very annoying, but it is 20% chance something and 80% nothing, even at that stage where they order the biopsy. So I was like, you're getting way ahead of yourself here. And we had this whole talk and I'm trying to calm her down. She's crying. She said, I'm a single mom. And I said, and everything's going to be okay. I said, you're a single mom. I'm sure you still have like a village, you know, that's going to come to your aid if you need it. But I also think you're not going to need it because nothing is happening other than a doctor's appointment right now. That's all that's happening. And I'm like, she's frantic. Mm-hmm. And then they come in finally and they say to her, you can go. And she goes, what, that's it? And they're like, yeah, everything's fine. You can go. And she's like, she's at the door, so she's not next to me. And she goes, tell that girl I say thank you. And she leaves. And I was like, yeah.
Quinn, your social work degree is coming into play here. It feels like Quinn's doing therapy for the masses. It's unlicensed, so she can't, like, you know, you can't sell it. But it's great that you're out in the world giving moments. And I think probably what was, I don't know, I imagine what was fun is you doing that is not something you probably can do with your clients. You have to be like, why do you feel that
way? Why are you scared? What are you scared of?
Why are you scared? I hope that's how you do
that. That's how I talk. I do it in a really weird, deep way.
Why are you scared?
And then they turn to me and
they're like. You can be like, grow up. Hey, stop. Quit it.
Then they turned to me and I was like, can I go? And they were like, you got to get a biopsy.
Fuck.
And I was like,
did you get another biopsy?
Next week I gotta go.
Do they give you Valium, Klonopin? What's their deal?
It's local anesthesia or something. So
why aren't
it's
they
an
giving
anesthetic.
You Klonopin?
Like
why
you're
aren't
awake.
They giving you a little something. Something. A
you're
little
awake,
something to
but you
off.
Don't. I mean, you feel it, but it's not. It's like I think what's mostly annoying about it is you read online that they'll lay you down on your stomach and have a hole where your boob goes, like in a.
Yeah.
Imagine a massage bed for your face, but it's for your boob.
God, that would be incredible if there was a boob one. Why don't we have that?
I would really like to do that one, but when I went last time, that's not how it goes.
No,
they
you
didn't
were
have
like
a bed
sitting
at all.
Up.
And then I think it'll be like that this time where you're sitting up, your face is smashed against the glass, they're yelling at you. What I didn't like about last time was how sort of mean they were, where I was like, get a grip. Like, I'm here doing this horrible thing. The bare
Where's
min
my fucking
is for you
lollipop
to
and
explain
sticker?
What you're
Yeah.
doing and be nice. Terrible bedside manner. Going straight back there to enjoy the show again.
Wait, you're going to the same place? God damn it. Quinn, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you have to go back to the same place. Have you written a review?
No. No. I don't write reviews, is the truth.
Yeah, I don't either. Although I will say...
It feels like a waste of time. It feels like you already got angry, and then you're going to sit down and get yourself angry again. Ugh. And it just like feels like poison to me. So once I'm away from a bad experience, I'm just away from it.
I mean, but I read so many reviews. So I consume them, but I don't participate, which is an interesting endeavor.
Agree.
I wanted to say, I remember from your cruise, when you went on the 3-day cruise with your family, the server had come up to you and was like, I need a really good review. Please give us a good review. It lets us come back. We got the same spiel, and it also made me so uncomfortable.
I can't believe they do that. Like, what a weird, awkward, like, my job is in your hands. And I'm like, why though?
Why? I mean, I did the review and I gave great. And then at one point during the review, they said, or during the, your reviews, they were like, did someone ask you to give a good review? And I lied and I said no. But I was like, is that the wrong thing? Should they have that? I didn't know. But I felt like that was cheating if they asked me to give them a good review. I didn't know. I felt uncomfortable. I felt like I was ratting someone out. I didn't know.
It doesn't feel right. The whole thing is super screwed up.
I will say my nephews at breakfast had every piece of chocolate breakfast item. Chocolate donut, chocolate croissant, chocolate pancakes, chocolate, hot chocolate. Like there was a lot of,
wow.
We really went for it. We really went for it.
That's nice. That's fun.
It's really fun.
I wanted to ask, do you want to come meet at like 8 in the city on Sunday? Meet me in Jordan.
8 p.m.?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm actually going to be in the city. I'm seeing another parody show.
Because we're seeing Vape at 6:30, and then we'll be done and we'll get drinks with Jen if you want to come meet us.
Perfect. I'm going to go to – I'm seeing a show downtown. I'm seeing Kevin. There's a Home Alone parody that I'm seeing that my friend Kristen directed. It's Home Alone with puppets. So I'm going to see that at the Tank at 3 with Lindsay Hope Perlman. So I'm going to see
that'll be
really fun. And I wanted to do, when I have on a home, I have like a Christmas tree decorating party at my house. The problem is this weekend is getting very full and I don't think I'm going to have time. I'm going to like 2 parties on Saturday. I'm seeing a concert with Jared on Friday night, which I cannot wait. I'm so excited. We're going to see the Beths, and I don't know if anybody remembers the conversation the last time we went and saw the Beths together, which was we got really high. We were talking about East Coast oysters, and it was while the band was playing, and someone pulled us aside and said, excuse me, I can hear everything you're saying during the show. And both Jared and I were like, oops. And so we're actually going to get oysters before the concert.
Really fun.
Which will be really fun.
So you get it out of your system and you don't talk about it during the concert?
Yeah, the rules are, it's like the rules of Fight Club. The rules of oysters, we don't talk about oysters. And so, I have a very full weekend, which will be very good for me. I need to be full of things to do. And then next week is like all my... Oh, Quinn, what are you doing next Thursday night?
Nothing. It will be the day after my... I'm getting a biopsy that morning.
Do you want to come with me to the paperless post party?
Yes, I do.
Great. I had invited someone previously, but they won't be coming. So I would love for you to come.
It should always be me. Even if we're married, it should be me. If you're just like
so
to your
excited.
Husband, you're like, you know, I always
bring Quinn. I was so excited to have a date of mine come and be like, let's see how this feels. This is exciting and fun.
Totally. Do you want me to pretend to be your boyfriend?
Mm-hmm. I'll do Don't it. You always? Is that not
This is
that
the
you
beginning
do?
Of a really good rom-com, I think. And like me wearing a fake mustache that keeps falling off.
What's really fun is that like we always thought I was like single white femaling you. And it's not. It's actually I'm single white femaling Matt.
Should we tell a story?
Yeah, let's pause. By the way, you're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Creepily.
Oh, don't we have a...
We have patrons. I just was looking the same way,
time. Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we have like a bunch. Guys, we have four.
Ah! Holy cow.
Let's like, we'll go in order. Let's do 2 this week, 2 next week.
Great.
Camden. Camden on Camden. You end, the Camden Yards.
Camden, Camden, welcome to the Hamptons. Here's a cocktail, Camden. What a fancy name for a fancy gal. Are you a gal or are you a guy? It's one of those names where I'd rather die than guess which one.
Camden, you are genderless because we think you are above it all. Camden, 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 you are so Camden-in-ness. I don't know what that word means. What
Why do they always
Camden?
Have to rhyme?
What
it begs the question. Nothing.
Camden, Lambden, Bamden, Famden.
No word rhymes with Camden.
Camden, which is, you know what? Camden.
Can we call you Cam? Welcome to the fam.
Camden, right. Camden, are you a Cam or are you Din? If you're a Din, do you want to be Finn? Are you a Cam? Let's go.
This reminds me of, I was at Griff's Don't party. I was talking to my friend Hillary, who you know.
Yeah.
And I was, did you hear me pitching to her that I'd like to call her Larry?
Larry.
I was like, because she was saying she used to go by Hill, and I was like, have you ever considered Larry?
Have I got
Isn't
a pitch
good?
For you?
Hey, I'm Hillary, but you can call me Larry. It's good.
It's really good. It's really good. Camden, I hope you liked that song. Thank you for joining Patreon. I'm so glad you're here. You're a star. Thank you, Camden. Mm-hmm. This one, I don't know how we're going to rhyme this name. Mary.
It's not. Oh.
Mary, your name rhymes with mine because my name is Carrie, but you're Mary and that's more important to the conversation because we're singing a song about your servination. And Mary, Mary, that didn't make sense, but it's okay because you are so henceforth known as Mary. Did you want to go?
Mary, 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 you are scary. Mary, I'm really giving you a glary.
I got to turn this positive.
Mary, Mary, do you like sherry? We could have a cocktail party with you. Mary, come on over. Let's have some.
Cherry, that's what you offered. You got to go back to the story. It's getting too rhymey. I think we should stop rhyming entirely and just sing from the heart.
It's getting too much. It's getting too much. Mary, what if we did like a beat poem? Mary, you are here on Patreon and we love you so much so.
And we're not wrong.
I thought you wanted to go away from rhyming.
Oh, fuck. You're right. Mary's walking down the street and sees a dog. She waves hi to it. She's that kind of person that waves to dogs. She's really great. She always wears culottes and looks so good in them. Mary, she's one of those people that lights up the grocery store. I bet you thought I was gonna say room. But Mary's one of those people that lights up a grocery store when she's there shopping to make a delicious meal. She's such a good chef. It's just weird writing a song about someone you know so little about. Just guessing, you know, you just throw out some guesses.
No, I would love to know, Mary, do you light up the grocery store? And Camden, are you Cam or are you a Din? I don't know. I mean, these are questions we have. And so I just want to know what you think, if we're right. By the way, I have to say, we can't say Mary's email, but Mary, your email is incredible. It's an incredible email.
You could have made it about that.
I could have, but I didn't want to reveal your email address because the last thing you need is your email to be splashed on this podcast for hundreds of listeners.
For 200 people to hear.
Mary, I love your email address. Mary has the coolest email address I've ever seen. Camden, I saw yours, but yours was a private relay from Apple. So it's not a unique one to you. It's one with a lot of numbers and letters, and I don't think you made that up, but that's okay. Camden, you're cool too. Mary, you have a very, 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 very cool email.
Who goes first?
You.
Oh, mine's so sad. So I'm going to talk to you about Pakistan honor killings. Wah, wah. Really sad. I'm so sorry to have to bring this story today.
This is a lot. This is a lot. Let's take a minute. Let's take a knee.
Most of my stuff's from BBC and CNN. I also watched a documentary called A Girl in the River, The Price of Forgiveness, to highlight a particular case. But in 2015, nearly 1,100 women were murdered in honor killings. Jesus. Honor killings are in Pakistan are also known as karokari. And it's when you kill a woman because you believe that she's brought shame on your family somehow. Mm-hmm. So any member of the family or even of sometimes an in-law family might kill a woman in Pakistan because they don't like something she did. Usually it has to do with marrying who she wants or behaving in some way that they find dishonorable to their family. And the Human Rights Commission of Pakistan says that 470 cases of honor killings were reported in Pakistan in 2021. Those are the ones that are reported, and that's in 2021. They think it's probably double that and that it's about 1,000 a year. So in this movie, it centers around a woman named Saba. Saba knows this guy in her village, Kassar, for 4 years, and they're planning a wedding. And her father's helping her plan it. It's all tidied up. It's like, we're going to do this. She likes him a lot. And Saba's uncle tells the father, I don't think you should let Saba marry him, actually, because his family's really poor. They're of lower status than us. And I don't think it's a good idea. And when he breaks the news, he's like, oh, why don't you have her marry my brother-in-law? That would be better. How about that? And you just feel like it's... I mean, obviously, from an outside perspective, around. You're like, what? Yeah. Like, you told her she was going to marry this guy. She started to fall in love with him. She likes him. He's her age. And now you want her to marry your brother-in-law? That's so random. And she doesn't want to marry that guy. So she's really upset and goes to Kazar's house and tells him what's going on and tells his family and tells him they're trying to go against this plan. So... against her parents' wishes, or really her father's wishes, she marries Kassar. Not that I need to defend Saba's actions, but in the film, she also points out, at no point are we alone. I didn't do anything dishonorable. I married the person that I was told I was gonna marry. It wasn't my decision in the beginning to marry them. This was set up. And then I just went ahead and did it, but we didn't spend any time alone. I didn't do anything that should have brought dishonor, so to speak. And her relatives come pick her up when they hear what's happened. And they say, you have to come home with us to restore your honor. He can come for you in the appropriate way later. Meaning you're going to come home. He can then come pick you up and ask permission to take you. And she's scared to go, as she should be. And they swear on the Quran that they are not going to hurt her. They're like, we're not going to harm you. They get her and they beat her right away. So they just...
oh, my God.
I don't know. It feels like they're so religious. Like, they do so many things in the name of religion. And then they swear in the Quran they're not going to hurt her. And then they beat her up. She's begging them. They don't listen. They bring her to the edge of this river. And... the uncle holds her face and holds this gun to her head. And at the last minute, when the father fires the gun, she turns her face. And the result of turning her face is that the bullet goes through her face and not her brain. They don't realize that. They put her in a bag and they throw her in the river.
Oh, my God.
She gets out of the bag when they leave and uses branches on the edge of the river to pull herself up. She's been shot in the face. She sees a light, and it's a motorcycle. She follows it, and it leads her to a gas station. She explains what's happened and asks for help, and they take her to the hospital. Guards have to stand outside her hospital room because it's assumed that if the uncle and father find out that she's survived, they'll come kill her. Kazar visits her, and it's very sweet but sad. You know, she's talking to him. She's like, sad that she has a bullet wound in her face. It's a crazy scar. She's mourning the way she used to look. And he's asking her did you really get out of the river all by yourself or did somebody help you? And she says, I swear in the Quran, I did it myself. And he says, my love for her is so strong that I would die without her. Her belief is that because her father swore in the Quran not to hurt her and then did, that was why she was saved.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, I will never forgive them. The police are searching for them and she's in hiding so they won't harm her. And it's interesting because they're going to people in the town and in Pakistan, in this community, they're going all around. They're talking to people in this documentary and some people are saying, this is not what Islam teaches. Islam teaches to respect everybody's life and their right to choose. But then they're going to people in the community who are like, no, it really makes sense that he needed to do this to restore honor. He needed to shoot his daughter in the face. And even Saba's sister says it was justified. And she's angry at Saba because she says, now we're ostracized.
It reminds me, yeah, wow. Wow, and so it's totally divided.
Yeah, and the mom, it's interesting when they interview Saba's mom because she has this vibe of being like, I did not know this was going to happen to my child.
Mm.
And I'm devastated. And also, she should be scolded, not murdered. But also, no woman should ruin her parents' reputation. And Saba was disrespectful. And when I found out that she had gone and married without our permission, my thought was, let me die. So that you feel the pain that the mother feels, yeah, in this way where it's, and when they talk to Saba's father about doing it, he's very prideful and he says, you know, I'll spend my life in jail if I have to. What I did was right. I stand by what I did. I stand by my decision to shoot my daughter. And when they ask, you know, what did her mother think? He says, well, I went home afterwards and I told her I have killed your daughter as per my desire. And she cried. What else can she do? I am her husband. She is just my wife. And the language of like, I am her husband. She is just my wife. Like the status is,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So they're found, the uncle and the father are found, they're in prison. And the uncle's like, my brother, he had to do this. This was right. But it seems like it was her destiny that she survived it. But the father is like, I am her father and I fed her and she did this. And he has this metaphor for it where he says, one drop of piss in a gallon of milk and all the milk is destroyed. She destroyed everything.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had seen Kazar, I'd have killed him too. And they're, you know, putting him to task a bit. Like, where is it in the Quran that it says, like, that this should be done? And he says, well, where is it that says she can run away from home? It's not appropriate what she did either. So Saba moves in the meantime with her in-laws and she says she's happy there. We see her there. She's really close to her mother-in-law who treats her like a daughter. And the mother-in-law of the whole thing says, you know, her family thought our family was too poor and too big. We live with what we have and that's true, but we're living off it and we're feeding their kid now too. And Saba seems to really wonder about her own mother. Does she sympathize with her? It's like the loss for her of her entire family in this moment and not knowing what they... She doesn't forgive her uncle and her father, but I think she's very curious what the rest of her family thinks. And in the meantime, her father and uncle are awaiting trial and she gets this pro bono lawyer, Assad, who really cares about her and mm-hmm. who seems to be like, you don't have to take this. You don't have to be treated this way. The law should be in your favor and you don't have to forgive them. This is an attempted murder. It should be treated in a trial like an attempted murder. But the funny thing about this, which is all the funny thing about the history of this and honor killings is that there's this crazy part of the law in Pakistan at this time where the relatives, the justice is in their hands. The justice is in the relatives' hands. It's in the victim's hands. If you forgive and honor killing the people that attempted the murder or went through with the murder,
they could go free.
They'll be acquitted.
That puts the victims in such a way to be pressured.
And Saba over and over again is like, I do not forgive him. I do not forgive him. I do not forgive him. But if she does, he'll go free. And there's this, women are second rate citizens.
Yeah.
And this is believed across the board there. But Saba's staying strong at this point and saying they should be in prison forever. But her family, her husband's family, they don't know what to do either. And they're like, we think we need to do as prescribed, which is meet with the elders in the community and seek counsel from them, what they would have us do.
Because they're also afraid of being ostracized.
Yeah, and they're very poor, and like they live in this community where you don't know when you're going to need a favor or a friend. And I think also just the sadness of living somewhere where you would have no respect and no honor. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
So they, while they clearly stand by her, are like, Saba, we need to talk to the elders. And they are the ones that are going to figure out what we do.
Oh, God. Saba can't even have her own voice in this at all.
And it's crazy because the lawyer goes with them and is listening. And it's so dark where these older men are like, yeah, we need to come up with a compromise. And it's like a compromise. They tried to kill her. What are you talking about?
Isn't the compromise the long-lasting result of her? I mean, that's not even a compromise. That's not a compromise. Well, there's no compromise.
The lawyer there is like, how do you uphold the rights of girls if you only see things through the father's eyes? And they really like dodge. And they're like, you know, you really don't want to push your luck going to trial. And what we should be able to do is just move forward in peace. Like, this is best for everybody if we're just move forward in peace. So we're going to make sure that he doesn't come after you and try to complete this murder. We're going to make sure that you feel protected and that.
How?
Yeah, not at all. But they're like, we're just going to ask everybody. Can we all just pinky promise that there's no retribution in either direction? But that will mean that the prevailing message is,
they get off free.
It's okay to do this.
Yeah.
It's totally disgusting. Okay to do this. Why would you not do this? Kazar's older brother, I believe, is the eldest in the family. So, again, in this very patriarchal design, it becomes like you are the person to make the be-all, end-all choice. So he says, we live in the same neighborhood. We're in the same community. We can't live in conflict. There actually is no alternative. And if it escalates, we don't gain from that. Nobody gains from that. What if we need something from our neighbor at some point? While they're saying all this, Saba, you watch her totally go from the person that's making eye contact with the camera and being like, I don't forgive them, I won't forgive them, to being somebody that is detached entirely, like dissociated. She's like floating outside. Like, you feel her leave her body. So she's just receiving this and being like, whatever you want. Yeah, whatever you want, I'll go along with. And she's totally like numb. She's like, whatever you want to do, I'm okay with. So the day comes in court and she's supposed to give a forgiveness statement and watch her uncle and father be set free. And they show her getting ready for court and, you know, covering up. And the vibe is, there's a fake justice system. It's not designed to protect people like her.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't know if they will kill her when they get out, which was what they set out to do in the first place. There's an illusion that she has choices, but she doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Her father, but she also points out, she's like, I guess this is my only choice because when I think about my mom and my sisters, the person that puts food on the table is my father. If I put him in prison forever,
who's going to support my mom and sister?
Who will like make sure they don't starve? the elders get her a new lawyer. They didn't like that guy Assad that was super into women's rights. They were like, who is this guy? Get him out of here. So they get her a new lawyer she's never, ever met. He doesn't ask her what she wants. And he, meanwhile, will turn to the camera and be like, we're getting her exactly what she wants. And you're like, who the fuck are you? So he's like, that's what she wants. She wants them released. And you're like, yeah, I didn't ever see you even have a conversation with her. And he gives her basically a template. He's like, here's what you're going to say. Here's your forgiveness statement. She gives it. They're released. The old lawyer says, our court system in Pakistan is like a post office. It's just like, it's a building where you go and you get a thing stamped and sent. It's not a court system. And all it's here for is to guarantee that the men remain
free
in power.
Yeah.
Saba says in court she felt ill. And she says, and then in the future I might die at their hands. Only God knows. The mother-in-law says she is scared. And meanwhile, slowly Saba regains contact with her mother after making the decision to forgive her father. And the mother is saying things like, I know I'll get to speak to her again. She'll visit us one day. And when the dad is asked about it, he's like, yeah, water under the bridge. I've forgiven her. And she forgave me. And actually, it was really good that I stuck to my guns, literally, because that brought me respect and honor, which she had taken. So now people know. People know that I'm not to be trifled with and that I am a man of respect and that you cross me. And that's what happens.
Well, look at him. He got everything he wanted. He attempted to kill his daughter and she's still alive. Wow. What a great lesson.
And he's like, and my younger daughter saw, which was so great for them to see because now they're terrified. They will never cross me. Nothing like this will ever happen to me again. And
happened to you. Happened. Oh, God. Totally.
And Saba openly says, in this all, she says, I forgave them because I was pressured to forgive them. In my heart, they're not forgiven. She loves her mother. She visits her. They're on good terms. She's now pregnant. And she says she hopes she has a girl. And she hopes that she has a girl that can be brave and can stand up for herself and do what her heart wants. Which I'm like, I really hope that too. I think you need to move. But it's so depressing to have her, like, have these hopes for this child.
Wow.
The main thing I hope is that having been through this, she will be a different mother than her mother was to her. She will expect more, I think, from her husband. But these cases are publicized often, these honor killings. There was a story of a woman named Samia Sarwar who... she wanted to get divorced from her first cousin, which was an arranged murder.
Arranged marriage.
Sorry.
Honestly, it could be. It could be both. The same. Honestly, an arranged marriage
that was quite
is
the
an
Freudian slip, and yet,
yeah, yeah.
Well, they do. They want. She wants to marry someone she picks, and she's of course murdered, and there's a BBC documentary called License to Kill about that honor killing. Another honor killing that I read about was in 2014, a pregnant woman was stoned to death by her family for eloping and marrying a man that she loved. This one is so dense because
who know the consequences. I mean, obviously the blame lies in the people perpetrating it, but I'm also so curious of the people like... The men who are marrying these women.
Well, let me tell you about the guy that she married that before she got stoned to death. The guy she married, Muhammad Iqbal, was... Okay. Basically what happened is Muhammad Iqbal had a wife. He strangled her so he could marry Farzana. So then Farzana and him are engaged a really long time and she's pregnant, so they want to get married, and Mohammed is fighting with Farzana's dad about how much money for the bride price, and he's arguing, and then it seems like to hurt Mohammed the family is like, you won't pay, we'll stone her to death. Our child, your pregnant fiance. After you killed your first wife so you could bury her.
It is like all revenge killing. I just, again, like the idea of even hearing like these women are going with the men that they're falling in love with. It's like these men, I think, are also perpetrating the same. To know that this is existing, you are actively putting this person you quote unquote love in danger. Yeah. It feels like all, again, it's a system that's just giving men absolutely free will to do anything they want. And these women are just pawns.
There was an act that they passed in 2016 that mandated a minimum punishment of life imprisonment for people that do honor killings, even if a family member pardons them. And they were hoping that would close this loophole where all these killers are just asking for forgiveness. They were basically like, there's a mandatory imprisonment. And you can still pardon the killer, but the pardon would only mean that you wouldn't get the death penalty, but you would get the mandatory jail term regardless of whether you were pardoned. And it incorporates this concept called facade filars, which means mischief on earth, which means that a judge can impose severe punishments, death or life imprisonment, if it was dangerous to the community, even if a pardon happened. So that was meant to help classify these honor crimes as not just like, it's not between families. This is a crime against the state. This is a crime against the community. This is a crime against society. Mm-hmm. You can't, therefore, no one person has the power to forgive it. But the problem is there's still judicial discretion. So
you have these old guards in there who are like seeing this.
Who are like, is it even an honor killing? Like,
no,
you know, they can like, and there's all this pressure still because of the culture, and there's pressure to not report it because of this. So then it becomes like, don't accuse the person that tried to kill you, or don't tell anybody this was an honor killing. And there was a really recent loophole where there was a guy who killed Kwandil Bullock, who was a social media star, and her brother killed her. And then they used legal loopholes he got sentenced to life in prison in 2019. He confessed that he strangled her, his sister. Then he gets released in February of 2022. And it all had to do with his parents pardoning him. So
because it was his sister. And so it's like, that's so fucked.
So it's still happening. This is all to say, like, there was a law in 2016 to try to close this loophole. It's not closed. They're just finding new leaky parts of it. And there's stories about after this law was enacted in 2016, a British woman went to visit her family in Pakistan. They told her, you have to come home, your dad's dying, which wasn't true. And then she was found raped and strangled after she had come home. And it has to do with that years earlier, they had forced her to marry her cousin in an arranged marriage. And she got away. She started a new life in Dubai. And then they were like, come home, your dad's dying. And she told people, she was like, I'm really worried about going. I don't know if I'll come back alive. And there's another BBC documentary about her death called Murdered for Love, Samia Shahid. And basically her first cousin murdered her because she didn't marry him. Her dad played a role. Like, he told people she died of a heart attack. She had an autopsy. They're like, nope, she was strangled and raped. And he gets released from police custody because of lack of evidence. And he has since died but was never charged. And her cousin and former husband who did it, presumably, is still in custody but hasn't been sentenced. In 2017, there was a Pakistani mother who was sentenced to death for murdering her daughter. She burnt her alive after she married against her family's wishes.
So there are consequences for women? Just to be clear, there
that's what I wanted to highlight. Okay. Yes, indeed. It's very easy to get a woman killed for doing this, apparently. There was also this horrible story that's very recent, and I'll just tell it because it's shocking, because it's just happened, really. In 2023, a father and uncle fatally shot a girl, an 18-year-old. Her murder was actually ordered by the elders, by like a tribal council. And the reason why was that she appeared in a photo with a man that they wanted dead. And they saw the photo and they were like, kill her. And the dad and uncle did. The man has since been taken into protective. This is crazy. The man got taken into protective custody. So they saved the man that was the guy she was in the picture with. She died. And crazier still, as if it's already not upsetting, the police see the photo and they're like, this was digitally made. It's not a real photo of her with him that you killed this 18-year-old about.
What do you do with the rage? What do you do with the anger? What do you do? What do you do with it? These poor women who are just trying. And of course, in that,
it's so sad. Ugh. How do you, and like the, we watched, I was assigned to watch this movie as part of my trauma class. And it's like, was just so, because everyone is traumatized by this. Like the entire community is walking around carrying the trauma of the fact that your neighbor is trying to murder his daughter and then is walking down the street. And
to see a person, to be in the same, like to physically see a person walking free, knowing what they did. That's the other, it's like, that is, I'm
and these
so
little
shocked.
Girls growing up in this world where they're watching that happen.
Yes.
And
yes, I mean, the father said it best. My youngest daughters saw me do this. That's good. They'll mm-hmm. never, they'll never hurt
they'll
me
They'll never
like that.
Cross me. Yeah.
It's so.
They'll never do something as upsetting as marry for love.
You know, it just, the tenets of all major religions are basically the same. Do unto others, like it's all basically mm-hmm. the golden rule. Treat others mm-hmm. as you want to be treated. Be kind to others. Like that is the main, and we get so, dare I say it, the male ego gets so fucking involved in this. Mm-hmm. And it causes, like, this is the, because it's, you know, I'm so angry. I'm just
yeah,
so
I know.
Angry.
It's a lot.
It's a lot to feel, to know that people, I think what is also so frustrating is to know that people are women. I will speak about women, that women are existing in a culture where that is normal. Like mm-hmm. that, the anger I feel about it is nothing because the people there are experiencing it as a part of their daily reality. Mm-hmm. And what is my anger serving them? Nothing. I just, mm-hmm. I'm like mourning their lack of the injustice. Like I'm just mourning that mm-hmm. feeling of the lack of them understanding how horrible that is. You know what I mean? It's.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, Saba sounds like an incredibly brave and courageous person. And yeah. Her story is because she had the will to survive and she did, you know what I mean?
And to tell it. I don't think it's like,
how brave
not for
that
nothing
she,
that she's like,
she made it.
She
spoke
stared
loud.
This camera yeah. and this documentary filmmaker in the eye and said, I don't forgive them.
Yeah.
And I hope I have a daughter that's brave. Like, I just, yeah, you really feel so much toward her.
I hate that story. And I'm also so yeah. glad you shared it because yeah. I think those women deserve to have their names spoken. And, ugh.
And don't spring break in Pakistan.
Fuck you for saying that. You know what? Don't spring break in Pakistan. Although if you're a man, go. You can just kill anybody.
Live it up.
Do you remember I told that story? I don't know if it was a patron or not, but about like the hostile murders, about how there it does seem to be like there is a potential like secret way to go kill people in parts mm-hmm. of the world. And right. it feels like, you know.
There's also a not so secret way.
Yeah. And you could just do it. You could just do yeah. it.
Yeah.
I also want to know like if. I'm curious about these honor killings, like when someone does a random act of violence mm-hmm. against their family or their daughter, what is their anger level? Do you know what I mean? Like, because again, I think is interesting in the human psyche of like our selective anger or our selective outrage or like we all have lines, mm-hmm. right? We all in some way, shape, or form, we all carry hypocrisies within us. I certainly yeah. do. I'm not, you know. And so it's like, what is the difference if someone were to wrong your child? Mm-hmm. You know, it reminds me of the case of India that that I shared about the community killing of this man who was terrorizing a community. Mm-hmm. And how in those circumstances, if a woman is raped, she is shunned. It is her responsibility, yeah. you know? And it's like, it's just women. It's yeah. crazy to think that women are people, guys.
So, oh my God. I also forgot to tell you, really buried the lead on my sonogram story, which was, do you remember 2 years ago when I had to get a biopsy and then
that
I came home and a guy.
That 2 years ago? I thought that
and
was,
then,
that's crazy.
And then the guy flashed me. Remember that?
In the
in
subway?
My neighborhood?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
no.
Yeah.
In my neighborhood, and then I chased him because I was angry.
Yeah, I remember.
Well, weirdly, on the way to the sonogram, I sat down on the subway and then noticed the guy next to me was masturbating.
Oh.
And then I stood up. Luckily, I didn't have to see his penis. His hand was in his pants. But he was just, like, very intent on masturbating in a way that was not – he wasn't doing one of those things where you try to hide it. He was like, I am on the subway masturbating. I don't – it's a very busy train. And so I was like, oh, dang it. And I stood up and like walked over to some.
Oh, dang
like,
it. You
that's
said.
What I said. I looked over and went, dang it. And then I got up and walked over to some
ladies. Were
you upset
because there
I
was
said,
a chair next
and
to
I
it?
And I laughed and I said, I didn't know. And they were like, kind of like, wow. Like it was so intense. But I was like, why can't I just go get a sonogram or a biopsy without someone having to masturbate at me?
Quinn, I've said it once. I'll say it before. You have, of anyone I know, the worst subway luck of any human I've ever encountered. Like that.
Really do.
Really bad. Like the amount of times.
It's really bad.
Okay. I got this information from Wikipedia, NBC, ABC, CBS, A&E. A lot of initials I just said there. And weirdly, they all make sense, but that's just a lot. I want to introduce you to Julie Griffin. She is from Wisconsin. She's one of six kids. And in 1981, she's 23 years old. She's enrolled in school and she's working at the Sears in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. You know, is that not the most Midwestern thing you've ever heard in your life? Mm-hmm. And it's there where she meets Mark Jensen, who will become her future husband. And the two of them start to go out. They go to the same college. Now, to be clear, in a lot of these articles, I couldn't figure out how much older Mark was than her. There's like, it wasn't totally clear in a lot of these articles, but he is a little bit older than her. He's also going to the same school, the same local college. And what's important to know is that by the time they get married and they move away, Mark has graduated college and Julie has not. They will wind up getting married. They have two kids, David and Douglas. Early on in their marriage, they say that they both are working. She worked part-time for the Port Authority in Chicago. He was a branch manager at a financial firm. I also saw later that he would eventually work as a full stockbroker and she would stay home with the kids. So there was a little bit, it wasn't totally clear, but it does seem like they're pretty well off. They have the means, they're okay. But the marriage itself, as much as they grew up together and dated all through college, the marriage is a bit rocky. So we do find out that in 1991, Julie does have an affair with someone. Mm-hmm. She has an affair. Her husband finds out about it and he's not happy, but the affair does end. We also will find out that Mark also has an affair with a coworker later. Julie has some depression, so she's going to therapy for that. And what's also important to know is that after her affair, Julie is the victim of stalking. So what's happening is there are a lot of anonymous calls and hanging up. That's something that's affecting her. There's also pornographic photos that are being sent to her. There's a lot of things, and she's meticulously tracking all of these in a notebook. Mm-hmm. She believes it is the man she had an affair with, that she ended things with, that he's just obsessed and that he's continuing to pursue her in this, it's really horrific and unsettling way. It's December 3rd, 1998. Julie is 40 years old. And Mark walks into the bedroom after Julie has been sick for 3 days. And he sees her in bed under the covers. She is unconscious. She is rolled to her side. She's wearing a t-shirt and underwear. There's no obvious injuries, but she is completely unconscious. So he immediately calls 911. And he tells them his wife is not responding and that he needs help. The police, the ambulance come. They find that Julie is dead. She has 2 kids. They are 8 and 3 years old at the time of her death.
Oh my God, so sad.
So sad. Initially, they suspect she died of natural causes and they don't know what's going on. They don't know how she died. They do an autopsy and the first autopsy is inconclusive. Mark tells them that she had been sick for 3 days and apparently she had some trouble breathing and he left her alone. And they believe that's how she died. She just stopped breathing. While they're still waiting for the cause of death, people are starting to get a little suspicious of Mark. And obviously the police are investigating this, not knowing what the cause of death is. They're wondering, is it natural causes? Is it suicide? Is it homicide? But they're looking at all of the information. They find out that she has been stalked for years, which also does not look good. Her friends become very suspicious of Mark. When Julie is laid to rest at her wake and funeral, her friends will say Mark was standing like 5 feet from her casket and he had a group of guys around him. And he was laughing and joking around. And to them, it just looked really odd. Yeah. And then very soon after the funeral, they noticed that Mark took all of her belongings, put them in trash bags, and put them on the curb. So all of her belongings are out the house. And it just seems very quick. It takes months for the autopsy to come back with any sort of indication of how she died. And what they do find is that she had antifreeze in her system. They find antifreeze in her blood, stomach, and urine. They see that she also died of asphyxiation, that she stopped breathing. Mm-hmm. They also found sleeping pills in her system. And again, they're trying to figure out, was it suicide? Was it murder? We don't know. But it definitely was not natural causes at this point. When they look into her therapist, they find out 2 days before her death, she was prescribed antidepressants. And her therapist will say that she told her therapist that she was miserable over her failing marriage. That mixed with the stalking instances, I don't know the exact timeline, but the police will eventually receive an envelope from one of Julie's neighbors. And what you need to know is that a couple of days before she was found dead, Julie handed this envelope to a neighbor and she said,
she knew,
hey, if anything happens to me, give this to the police.
What?
So the police.
Julie, you solved your own murder?
So this note is addressed to the local police department and it includes a photo of an ominous list, which includes syringes and chemicals that she found in her husband's planner. And I'm going to read to you the letter that they found. I took this picture and I'm writing this on Saturday, November 21st, 1998 at 7 a.m. The quote list was in my husband's business daily planner, not meant for me to see. I don't know what it means, but if anything happens to me, he would be my first suspect. Our relationship has deteriorated to the polite superficial. I know he's never forgiven me for the brief affair I had with that creep 7 years ago. Mark lives for work and the kids, and he is an avid surfer of the internet. Anyway, I do not smoke or drink. My mother was an alcoholic, so I limit my drinking to one or two a week. Mark wants me to drink more with him in the evenings. I don't. I would never take my life because of my kids. They are everything to me. I regularly take Tylenol and multivitamins, occasionally take OTC stuff for colds, Zantac, or Imodium, have one prescription for migraine tablets, which Mark uses more than I. I pray I'm wrong and nothing happens, but I am suspicious of Mark's suspicious behavior and fear for my early demise. However, I will not leave David and Douglas, my life's greatest love, accomplishment, and wish. My three Ds, Daddy, Mark, David, and Douglas. Not great.
I cannot believe she wrote that.
Days.
Can you imagine writing that? Like, what kind of headspace you're in?
I mean, she wasn't. What's crazy is she. I mean, crazy. I don't want to use that term. It's so pejorative. But what's wild is that she went to the doctor a couple days before her therapist and was prescribed antidepressants. And it's curious to me. Did she bring this up to her therapist? There's just like a lot happening in her headspace in this situation. So once they have this letter, the police have their eyes focused on Mark, right? It seems that all signs point to Mark. Because in addition to this letter that Julie saved, there's evidence that Mark discussed poisoning his wife with coworkers and a jailhouse associate. While Mark and his friend were chatting and having a few drinks at this conference that they were at in St. Louis, Mark confided that you could seemingly poison your spouse with Benadryl, pool chemicals, and ethylene glycol, which is antifreeze. So it takes them a long time. Keep in mind, she dies in 1998 at the end of the year. It takes until 2002 for them to rule out suicide completely as a manner of death and make it homicide, which is then they can charge Mark. Mark is charged, and the prosecutors in this case will claim that Mark is really pissed about her affair 7 years ago and never let it go. In addition to this letter and this witness, these witnesses of him talking about poisoning his wife, is they're able to find that he searched the internet for information on poisoning. Additionally, there's another piece of evidence that corroborated their theory that she was poisoned, because at 9:42 on the morning of her death, but before he called 911, someone on this family's computer searched for diminished consciousness from ethylene glycol poisoning. And then two of those searches were deleted. His defense will be that Julie was depressed and she killed herself, and this letter was to frame her husband. What's also interesting is not long after his wife died, this woman that he was having an affair with ended up moving into their family home. And he will go on to marry this woman, Kelly. Yeah. So his trial is in 2008, 10 years after her death. And at this trial, the use of her letter is very controversial. And the reason is because if anyone has hearsay, or if anyone is accusing someone of wrongdoing, it is a part of the law that you are able to cross-examine that person, or you're able to confront the accuser in court. But because Julie was dead, this letter became this sort of like legal challenge that the prosecutors had to overcome. Because could they use this in the court of law? This piece of evidence was like, I think that's why the trial took so long to happen, because this piece of evidence was just hanging in limbo. It ended up going into the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court allowed them to use this letter at this initial trial. This statute of being able to confront the accuser was waived because the forfeiture of wrongdoing doctrine, under which a defendant waives his right to confront a witness if he caused the witness to be absent. So they're like, there's a loophole. You can use this because the person accused is possibly the one who killed them.
Who caused the absence.
Exactly. It's such a gentle thing. But
euphemism
also,
for murder.
But also, like, I would imagine
he may have caused her absence.
He might have caused her absence. At the same time, I'd be curious of what your dad thinks about this, because I imagine, like, then anyone can write anything. Then all this hearsay is included. Like, this person is accused of her absence, but he's not been convicted of her death at this point. So it's like, how can you, I just think it's a very interesting circular argument in mm-hmm. this legal case. And we'll see that mm-hmm. this plays out in eventually the appeal and retrial, which, spoiler alert, that's going to happen. So after this first trial, after 30 hours of deliberation, he is convicted of first-degree murder mm-hmm. or first-degree intentional homicide, and he is sentenced mm-hmm. to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Now, his kids are old enough where they can give their public support to their dad at his sentencing. So his two sons support their father, and they ask the judge for a parole date. They publicly declare their love. They publicly declare their love and support for their dad. Again, he is sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. His wife, the woman who he was having an affair with, who he married after his wife died, she ends up assuming custody of his and Julie's kids. So the kids are with their stepmom, who was also the woman. Like, I that to me is also just like my mind.
Yeah, yeah.
5 years later, in 2013, a federal judge, because at this point, Mark's defense team is like, we have a case for an appeal, right? This letter that was used as a huge part of the case against Mark is still in question. Even though it was mm-hmm. approved by the Supreme Court, let's take this to the lower courts in an appeal process. Mm-hmm. So in 2013, a federal judge overturned the conviction entirely, and he ordered that Mark be released from prison for 90 days. Mm-hmm. The case was overturned since her words at trial were violated his constitutional right to confront the witness testifying against him. They went back to court. This decision was overturned in 2015. So he goes back to prison. Then in 2016, they were like, hey, if you do it, you have to be retried for murder. And then in 2017, the conviction was reinstated. So they're going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, until finally in 2020, the conviction reinstated was reversed. And what happened was, this is the quote, it says, the matter was remanded to the circuit court for further proceedings, including trial. So basically, they're like, hey, the conviction reinstating was reversed. So you're not, the conviction has been reversed, I think, seemingly. And you have to go back to court, and the evidence contained in Julie Jensen's letter would not be admissible in this trial. So now prosecutors are like, okay, so we have this like huge steaming, what is the word I'm thinking of? Red gun, red flare. What is the thing? It's like we have smoking gun. There it
smoking
is.
Smoking gun.
We have this huge smoking gun where this woman. We have this huge red flare.
We have this huge gonorrhea flare-up happening.
We have a huge flare-up. So we have this smoking gun that now the prosecutors cannot use in trial. And they are convinced he did it. I mean, there's a lot of other evidence that he did it. But that, this like crux of their case.
But her
case,
being like, y'all, it's if I him. Turn up dead tomorrow, it's him. And it's then she him. Did.
So in 2023, that recently, again, she died in 1998. In 2023, the second trial officially begins. Again, they are not allowed to use this letter from Julie, but with the help of the Department of Justice and a lot of our updated technology and this computer analyst, they're able to make new discoveries that help their case against Mark. They're able to look at the print that they're able to look at the computer and the external hard drive. And not only are they able to find like more evidence that he's doing these searches about poisoning his wife, mm-hmm. but they're also able to find a fake email with a bunch of pornographic photo attachments that Mark yep. sent himself.
I was just going to say, he has to be the stalker.
Yes. Yep. That he tweaked the name of the sender to make it seem as if it were sent by someone else. So mm-hmm. all those years of harassment that Julie endured, thinking it was the man she had an affair with, it was actually her husband who was living in the same home as her. That, in addition to the eyewitness news and to the email searches and internet searches of poisoning, Mark is finally convicted in February of 2023. He is 63 years old, and he is sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Justice has been served for Julie. I do not know whether their kids believe their dad at this point or not, but what I do know is that I hope Julie's family has found some peace. But it seems that her murder is put away, and he will probably be away for the rest of his life. Mm. And that's a story of Julie Jensen, or I should say Julie Griffin, her yeah. married name.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't, you know, we don't deserve that her guy's not fucking name. Yeah.
Her maiden.
Her, nay.
Julie Griffin.
Wow.
Powerful.
Really crazy, right?
Yeah, it is. It's, what an asshole.
What an asshole, but also the foresight. Like, again, women's intuition.
But also,
I think
she's amazing.
I think women's intuition.
I just wish she'd have, like, gotten a hotel. Like, I can't imagine being in a headspace where I'm, like, writing a note like that.
No.
And then hanging out with the bro that I think is going to kill me.
No.
Like, I'd be like, I wouldn't, like, write the note and then see how it goes.
No. Well, I think what's, again, like.
I'm not victim blaming, I swear. I'm just.
No, well, she said, she's like, I don't know. I hope I'm wrong. Like, I think we've all felt that way. I hope I'm wrong. Like, maybe I'm being crazy. Like, we gaslight ourselves so often. And I think, like, I don't know. I think women's intuition is a very real thing. I think our blink, I think we are magical creatures. I think, like.
And remember, we also established that part of your blink is scientifically based in pheromones, where when somebody's up to shiesty shit, they smell different. Their sweat smells different. Fear sweat smells different. So if he's, I'm about to kill my wife, sweating, she's picking up that something is off in the room, and it's based on pheromones, and it's very real, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
And when you're hanging out with somebody planning to kill you, I believe that like there would be
the shift in energy and feeling. Hey, dearest listeners, readers, we love you.
And we love you.
We'll see you. We'll see you next week. Keep us posted on your life, Cam and Mary. We'll talk to you guys soon.